Hey, Shalom, Shalom, Shalom. Bless you all. Bless you all, Israel, saints of the Most High, straightway. I truly hope that you're all doing well this day, that this day finds you encouraged and strengthened and continually working on yourself. Hey, bless you all that are joining through the chat. Thank you. Appreciate everybody giving me an audio check. Good to see you in the room, Brother Willie. Miss you, my brother. Bless Sister Brittany and Sister Green. Hey, Ziona, how are you doing? Bless you all. Where's my moderator? I haven't seen him come in yet, Josh. But bless you all, those listening by phone and by way of internet. Bless them. Well, this is Elder Douglas Becker. I'm quite confident most of you all know, but there might be people that listen to it, you know, the recorded segment that don't know who I am. But anyway. So, yeah, this is me, Elder Douglas Becker, and this is the Brothers segment of Blog Talk Radio tonight. Man, what did y'all think of that word yesterday, huh? Boy, that really resonated. That was so solid and so clear that what Shepherd put out yesterday. I mean, you can't misconstrue that any other way, who Israel is, right? Israel, bloodline Israel, comes through our Messiah. Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Christ, Jesus our Messiah, our Savior. We have to be born again of the blood. Isn't that true, huh? Glory to the King. Glory, glory, glory. Beautiful, wonderful. Okay, I got a lot to cover tonight. I actually didn't know that I had this much already on paper. And when I started looking, I was like, oh my God, I better stop, because the subject we're talking about is tonight is oaths. It's like part two. Part one we talked about, bless you, Brother Jordan. Part one was talking about vows and the importance of them and what they mean and the purpose for them and how they fit into our Israelite culture and how there's still something that is actually can be done. Torah-wise, they're still perfectly lawful. And so tonight, again, we're going to be talking about oaths and the swearing of oaths. And I was really quite amazed in going into this study how intricate oaths are and the swearing of oaths. Bush, Brother Travis, good to have you in the room. And it kind of shocked me. I never realized that it was that deep. I mean, it goes, you know, places that it's even hard for... you have to be careful when you're looking into a subject like this, because it could, if you're not careful, could actually cause you to go start pulling something out that really might not be there. Just let me put it like that. But we'll get into that. But so with that, we're going to get started. I mean, I have a lot here to cover tonight, a lot here, and I'm going to try to keep it slow. And, you know, and it comes down to time, sometimes, as my wife tells me, I get a little bit fast and get ahead of myself. But I'll try to keep it slow and more thorough, because there is a lot to think about with this. All right, again, part two, the oath and swearing of oaths. Okay, what is an oath? I guess that's a good place to start, isn't it? An oath is a sworn testimony. It's a declaration. It is a bond by which men bind themselves. It is a promise before man and Yahweh, and all oaths must be sworn in the name of Yahweh. That's in Israel. An oath is a sworn affirmation to be true and faithful to one's promises. An oath is fulfilled in the promise that was sworn. Okay, that's pretty much, I could have kept going, but that pretty much gives you the basics of what an oath is. All right, quickly, I got this in here, Merriam-Webster's definition of oath, and the only reason I included it in here, because it doesn't do a bad job when you start lining up with what the definitions are in Hebrew. So, Merriam-Webster's definition of oath, one, a solemn, usually former calling upon, they use God in capital G, and calling upon Yahweh or a God, small g, to witness to the truth of what one says, or to witness that one sincerely intends to do what one says. So you're locking yourself in when you swear a vow. A a solemn attestation of the truth or inviolability of one's words. Something such as a promise corroborated by an oath. Okay, these are all things we're going to find as we're going on that you can see why this definition isn't too far off. Because it actually was, it's pretty close to what the Hebrew's talking about. All right. Yahweh swore oaths and bound himself by these oaths. So if it comes from the creator of all things, and he himself does it, well, we automatically know by default that it's lawful. Because he's not going to go do something and declare himself and then not allow us to in any time, because Yah doesn't change. He's the same yesterday and today forever. And so we're going to get into later, I want to get ahead of myself, but in Matthew 5 and a few other places, people will say that it's done away with, but no, it's not. Because Yah is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Yahweh expressly commands us to swear only by his name as Israel. Oaths and covenants go hand in hand. A covenant is the pledge, the contract, the agreement between two parties, and the oath, the sworn affirmation, is the promise to uphold the covenant agreement. And you kind of do the same thing when you swear, just doing a personal oath or a personal declaration. I mean, you can't force Yah to enter in a covenant agreement with you because he hears what you said, but you know, you're binding yourself. Let me put it like that. Swearing an oath has to do with completion, fulfillment. At some point, it's going to come to a closure at some point. It can be for a short amount of time. It can be for a great length of time. When you were born again, you enter into the oath Yahweh swore to Israel and become a partaker of them oaths by promise. Because he made a promise, he swore, and we're going to get into that too, because he could swear by no greater. He swore by himself. He made the covenant with Abraham. It went from a promise, or he swore the oath, and that became the covenant agreement between him and Abraham about the promised land, about the seed multiplying, and there's a whole bunch of other things. Oaths and promises, and we all know the weight that broken promises carry. The violation of trust is ruin. A man's word is his bond and must be fulfilled, or they will be found guilty before Yah and men, and that becomes sin. Failing to perform one's oaths was and is sin, and those that did fail were considered fools. We enter into oaths all the time when making promises, but generally our oaths are not sworn to Yahweh and men and before men to perform the promise. A promise doesn't have to be an oath, but an oath always has to be a promise. It all has to do with the swearing of the said promises. Oaths are interwoven all over the Word, even from the very beginning of creation. What I mean by that is that they can act. We're going to see that they can actually encompass the feast days, the seventh day Sabbath of rest, which is a feast, of course, and a whole bunch of other things. But I didn't want to dig too deep into that because it gets really, really deep into that. Swearing is connected directly to the number 7 in Hebrew. It might be something spoken 7 times, or something offering the amount of 7, or it might be a swearing before 7 witnesses or completing 7 cycles. How is an oath a curse? An oath of cursing is a sworn oath, a sworn agreement between parties that if the one taking the oath is not telling the truth, is in transgression and wickedness by not performing the oath, then the party guilty before Yahweh and men will have a curse placed upon them by their own covenant agreement. We're going to go over an account that breaks this down very well. Bless you, Brother Vernon. Calling Yahweh to witness the truth of a statement. Okay, that's just part of an oath. All right, here's the breakdown. Like I said, I'm going to try to keep it slow. The word oath, it's the Hebrew 7621. It's shabu. Shabu. Remember that root word, shabu. Well, not that one, but the next one. Shabbat, that's the one I'm looking for. Okay, this is, again, 7621, getting ahead of myself. It's the Hebrew word Shabuah. It's a passive participle of the Hebrews 76:50. And I'll tell you what, this when I was breaking this down and studying this and putting my time in on this, you get into all this English stuff and all this breaking down of sentence and grammar. I'll let you all know, Elder did not do well at that, because I had this mindset going to school, hey, I can sit, talk to the person next to me, they can understand me perfectly, right? So what do I need all this grammar stuff for, right? I know how to make a verb and a noun just by the simple fact that I speak, but so I didn't do too well in school when it come to, you know, the English class, excuse me. But, okay, it's a passive participle of the Hebrew 76:50, and it means to swear at, that's the verb form, sworn to a person, place, or thing, to swear to a person, place, or thing, properly something sworn that is an oath. Okay, I hope I didn't go over that too fast, but that is the definition of oath. But the interesting thing is this, you're going to find out this Hebrew 76:50, which is the word to swear, swore, sworn, all these other words, oath, all have their root in 876:50, and I'm going to get to that. Okay, so what is a passive participle? I wish I had an English teacher on here. Okay, thanks, Josh, for posting that, all right? Passive means something that's already taken place, so when you use oath, and it ties in with, and we're going to look at the definition of Hebrew 76:50, it means that you've already performed that. You've already sworn to it. That means that's how it's connected with the Hebrew 76:50. So we'll go over that first, okay? Or next, I should say. All right, Hebrew 76:50, Shabbat. These are, when you look up in Strong's or in the Word, these all mean for swear, sworn, or swore. A primitive root properly to be complete. So when you swear something, it means to be complete. To seven oneself, that is, swear is if I by repeating a declaration seven times. it means to charge by an oath, with an oath, feed to the full. It says by mistake for 876. I have no idea why Strong's put that in there. So basically, we have an oath that means to swear. So it tells you right away if it's an oath, it's to swear to a person, place, or thing. Something sworn. So it's all going right, directing us right back. The oath identifying that it has to be something sworn. So we go look at the word to swear or sworn. It means to be complete. It means to seven oneself. I mean, as if to repeat by declaring seven times. And again, charged by an oath, with an oath. Oh my God, I got more English stuff in here. The denominative from Hebrew 76:51, it serves as a modifier. That's what it means. And so we're going to look up Hebrew 76, forgive me if I'm losing any of y'all, because this is kind of Greek to me too. I got it in my head, but explaining it clearly sometimes gets to be a bit of a challenge, so bear with me. So we start out with oath, 876:21, and it's got its roots in 876:50, that's swear, which is Shabbat, and then it says it's denominative from Hebrew 76:51. So Hebrew 76:51, if you look, is Hebrew for seven, which is Sheba. So Hebrew 76:51, Sheba, it's from 76:50. So the word seven has its root from the word swear, what the definition is for swear or to be complete. So we've already can see that to be complete, when you use the word seven, it means to be complete, but it also ties directly into swearing. Very interesting, all this stuff. And we see so many examples of seven being used in the Word for all kinds of things. It's like it's a declaration, a statement. It's sealing something. It's making it, again, complete, whole, finished. All right, 876:51, again, Sheba, from 876:50, which again is swear. a primitive cardinal number, 7, also 7 times, by implication, weak, by extension, indefinite number. Again, these are all coming back from the root word for swear. And the word weak, the Hebrew 76:20, because we mentioned by implication a weak in 76:51. Forgive me if this isn't making sense. I'm trying my best. So weak in 76:20, it's shabua. It's properly a passive participle of, again, 876:50, which is the definition for swearing, to swore, to swear, or sworn, swore. It means literally sevened, that is, as in a week, specifically of years. And it also, Brown Driver's Biggs, also includes the Feast of Weeks in this definition of 76:20. So after going through all that, what I'm showing the importance is that this, when it comes to oaths and swearing of oaths, they're all tied directly into the number 7. Because they all go back, the word swear, everything goes right back to the age 76:50. It always points back. It took its root, that Hebrew definition for 7, for weak, and for oath, all came out of age 76:50, that root word. And if anybody wants to sit down and put a little bit more time and break this down, it is very interesting, but it's also very overwhelming, really. I mean, it really is, because, and the reason is, you see it on here, you see the definitions, but there's not a whole lot of book describing where when somebody swore oaths that they were actually sevened. We have examples, we're going to go over a few of them, but we're going to show a few examples where there is an oath or an appearance of an oath being made, and there's some form of 7 in there. That's why I said earlier that this actually might tie back into, and if you read somebody's other people's writings and stuff, articles and their research and their studies, they try to put the 7 days of creation in this, that Yah swore an oath to himself to, in 7 days he was going to create this, and then he completed it. And I mean, there's all kind of stuff, but I left it all out of there because there's really just no way to positively prove that. It might be there, but it's really not there, and I don't want to get into the abstract. Let's go, after we've got these definitions, let's start with swearing an oath by the name and in the name of Yahweh. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 13 through 15. Deuteronomy 6, 13 through 15. All right, verse 13. Thou shalt fear Yahweh the Elohim and serve him, and shalt swear by his name. Again, the word swear is the Hebrew 76:50. It means to be complete in him, in your reverence, in your servitude, and in your oaths. You swear by his name. So the Bible gives us, the book gives us definite instructions on how, when it comes to swearing, which goes right back to oath, we have to do it in his name. Verse 14, you shall not go after other elves, other gods, of the gods of the people which are around about you. For Yahweh the Elohim is a jealous El among you, lest the anger of Yahweh be kindled against thee, destroy thee, Hamas, the face of the earth. So he is stating in here, again, it's only by his name. When you serve him, and you're going to fear him, his reverence, that you're going to use his name when you perform your oaths, when you swear to your oaths. If you swear it to another El, because Yah is a jealous El, it's going to be counted sin towards you, and you're going to feel his anger. Pretty simple, right? All right, Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 20. Thou shalt fear Yahweh the Elohim. Him shalt thou serve, and to him shalt thou cleave, and swear by his name. Again, the book has given us implicit instructions about how Israel as a people, when you're going to go to perform your oath or swear to an oath, that it must invoke the name of the Most High. Again, the word swear, the Hebrew 76:50, to be complete in your reverence, in your servitude, and in your oaths to the Most High. Leviticus 19, verses 11 and 12. Okay, Leviticus 19:11-12. You shall not steal, neither deal falsely, neither lie one to another. And you shall not swear by my name falsely, neither shalt thou profane the name of Yahweh Elohim. I am the master. Swearing an oath in Yah's name and doing under false pretenses causes one to profane, defile the name of Yah. So there's a few different ways to look at this, right? The one main one being that it's not really in you to perform it. You're just doing it out there for eye candy, for put something in people's ears. But what you're doing, whether you believe it or not, is you're actually profaning his name because you're not one that's really sincere about taking the oath or use, and when you because you used his name, if that makes sense. All right, so we have examples here. We just read how many examples from the Torah about swearing by Yah's name, because he swore by his name, because there is no greater. So we know because there's no greater, that's the only name that is going to give credibility as an Israelite to the sincerity of the oath, to the sincerity of the promise that you are making. All right, oaths and covenants. We're going to go over a few examples here. Starting in Deuteronomy chapter 29, verses 1 and 15. 1 through 15. Deuteronomy 29, 1 through 15. These are the words of the covenant, which Yahweh commanded Moshe to make with the children of Israel in the land of Moab, beside the covenant which he made with them in Horeb. Okay, let me break this down. Beside the covenant which he made with them in Horeb. This was not a new covenant in addition to that one, the one he made in Sinai, but simply it was renewal, a reaffirmation of that same covenant. So don't get it mixed up like there was two separate covenants that Yah made with the people. At Sinai, the covenant was, properly speaking, made. That's where it was made. Sacrifices were offered. If you read the account, the people were sprinkled with the sacrificial blood, whereby the covenant was ratified or sealed. And you can find that in Exodus 24, Psalms 1, chapter 1, verse 5. But on the occasion here referred to, no sacrifices were offered, for this was merely the recognition of the covenant formally made as still being in existence. It was just a reiteration, and again, just reminding the people that this covenant that was done in Horeb was the same one that was done in Mount Sinai. Verse 2, and Moshe called all unto all Israel and said unto them, you have seen all that Yahweh did before your eyes in the land of Egypt unto Pharaoh, unto all his servants, and unto all his land. The great temptations with the eyes have seen, the signs and those great miracles. So we have Moses, he's going to run down the history and the mighty wonders that the Most High did for the people. Yet Yahweh have not given you, he's trying to bring them back into the remembrance and etch it in their brain of this covenant agreement they made with the Most High when they said, when they agreed to all the words that Moses spoke. Yet Yahweh hath not given you a heart to receive, and eyes to see, and ears to hear unto this day. And I have led you 40 years in the wilderness, your clothes are not waxen old upon you, and thy shoe is not waxen old upon thy foot. You have not eaten bread, neither have you drunk wine or strong drink, that you might know that I am Yahweh. Yah is removing everything that would cause the people's minds to venture away, to focus on other objects, right, or other interests, to keep them solely remembering that he is the Elohim that delivered them out of the house of bondage. And when you came unto this place, Sihon the king of Heshbon and Og the king of Bashan came out against us into battle, and we smote them. And we took their land and gave it for an inheritance unto the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half the tribe of Manasseh. Keep therefore the words of this covenant and do them, that you may prosper in all that you do. You stand this day, all of you, before Yahweh the Elohim, your captains of your tribes, your elders, your officers, with all the men of Israel, your little ones, your wives. So everybody was here when this covenant was made. This promise that Yah gave to Israel, that if you do this, then I'm going to bless you this way. If you, the same promise though, if you don't do this, then I'm going to get, you're going to feel my wrath. You're going to feel the punishment for sin. He made this promise, and they agreed to the promise, and they entered into it and became a covenant. Your little ones, your wives, the stranger that is in thy camp, from the hewer of thy wood unto the drawer of thy water. That thou shouldest enter into covenant with Yahweh the Elohim, and into his oath, which Yahweh the Elohim maketh with his face. So here they're clearly lining out the direct correlation, the corroboration between something that's a promise as in, is in an oath, that's something Yah swear, becoming a covenant, or the pledge, or the agreement by two parties. And Yah, knowing that the seriousness of oath, especially when it's sworn in his name, is won't break it. Now, people may break it. They agree to it. There may be some generational curses because of this. But you have this full assurance that he is not going to go back on his word. He promised that he would do these things for Israel. And he reminded them all the things that he did for them already, just to get their brains going and take away all their excuses if perhaps they forgot or didn't want to care to think about it. So he reinforced it again in their minds. What was Yahweh's oath to his people? That if they kept the covenant agreement which they agreed to, that Yahweh would prosper Israel in all that they do. The covenant agreement was also an oath of cursing that Israel bound themselves to in their agreement to perform that all Yahweh had said to do. Failure to keep and guard the sworn oath placed upon Israel curses and the punishment for breaking the covenant agreement. It was by the oath that the allegiance was formed. As Israel swore before Yah to uphold their end of the covenant, they came to agreement. They swore. They said, Amen. All right, verse 13. That he may establish thee today. Okay, let me go back to read 12 again. That thou shouldest enter into a covenant with Yahweh the Elohim and into his oath. You're entering in this. You're entering into his promise, right? Which Yahweh make with thee this day, that he may establish thee for people unto himself, that he may be unto thee as an Elohim, as he has said unto thee, and as he has sworn unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. Neither with you only do I make this covenant and this oath, but with him that standeth here with us this day before Yahweh the Elohim, and also with him that is not here with us this day. So when you were born again, when you see the Holy Spirit, when you knew to start keeping Torah and keeping, when you knew you were Israel, you entered into this covenant agreement by promise. That's why it says in verse 15 again, that those that stand with us here this day, they also enter into this covenant and this oath, and also him that is not here with us this day, because all the generations of Israel, this is how binding oaths are. When somebody actually swears an oath, this is how serious this matter is. In Israel, they didn't take this stuff lightly at all. They just didn't let people go out there and just fly out of their mouth and just speaking words as fools do. Okay, I promise to do this. No, they made you stick to it. If you were going to affirm that you were going to do something, they wanted it in the form of an oath, a sworn oath. You locked yourself in, and to back out of it, I don't think there's any better way to keep people honest sometimes. And then you want to show your integrity, you want to show what kind of character your person is. If you swear an oath, swear it to the Most High, and swear it before men, because it has to be witnessed. That's where the strength is between Yah and men, right? And somebody actually openly doing this and then deciding that they're going to back out, well, that stuff makes Yah angry, and of course, that amongst the people, you're going to be counted as somebody that's dishonorable, disrespectful, can't be trusted. But this stuff made Israel, it forged a different character in them because it was so serious. They saw the seriousness of it. All right, Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 6. Deuteronomy 7, 6 through 12. Okay, starting in verse 6, "For thou art a holy people unto Yahweh Elohim, for Yahweh Elohim hath chosen thee to be a special people." How many times have we hear pastors have been saying that lately? "Unto himself, above all people that are upon the face of the earth. Yahweh did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because you were more number than any people. For yea, you were the fewest of all people. But because Yahweh loved you, and because he would keep the oath," again, something that is sworn or something that is promised, "which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath Yahweh brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of bondmen for the hand of the Pharaoh, the king," because he promised through Moshe the land that was going to become Israel. He promised it, and he's going to perform that oath. Even in all of his anger and all the stuff that Israel did, he was still going to perform that oath to Israel, because he can't go back on it, because he knows the power of the bond of his own word. And he expects the people to have the exact same mentality. Verse 9, "Now know therefore that Yahweh Elohim, he is Elohim, the El, the faithful El, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations." Okay, so again, he keepeth covenant and mercy with them that, one, love him, two, keep his commandments. He'll do this for 1,000 generations. But for those that decide that they want to break the covenant, they want to break their promise to do as Yahweh said, this is what he has for them. "And he repayeth them that hate him to their face, destroy them. He will not be slack in him that hateth him. He will repay him to his face." I'm sorry, Josh, this is up to verse 12, so we got 11, 12 yet. "Thou shalt therefore keep the commandments and the statutes and the judgments which I command thee this day to do them. Wherefore it shall come to pass, if you hearken to these judgments and keep and do them, then Yahweh the Elohim shall keep unto thee the covenant and the mercy which he sware unto thy fathers." So this is a two-party agreement. You keep your end of the deal, Yah will keep his. You don't keep your end of the deal, he's under no obligation, even though he made the promise, because you broke yours. That's how serious he is about swearing oaths. All right, we're going to go through a few examples. Remember, we talked about early on the definitions, okay, about the how everything went back to swearing Hebrews 76:50. And then how everything, even the word seven, went back to Hebrews 76:50. So we're going to get a few examples where this really has some good credibility. You don't find too many of that examples in here, even though you see the word seven many times. But we're going to go over a few of them, okay? Genesis chapter 21, verse 22 through 32. So that's 22 through 32 in Genesis chapter 21. "And it came to pass at that time Abimelech and Pichol, the chief captain of his host, spake unto Abraham, saying, Yah is with thee in all that thou doest." So they acknowledged that Abraham had the Most High on his side. They can see Yah working with him. You can see how Yah has blessed Abraham greatly. "Now therefore swear unto me hereby Yah that thou wilt not deal falsely." Now remember, this is Abimelech and Pichol talking to Abraham, and they're entering in a situation now, and they want to get Abraham's word about this situation, and they're going to lock him in by making Abraham, or desiring him to swear to this thing, because they understood the how serious it was to swear an oath, and how binding it was on a man's character, this promise. "Now therefore swear unto me hereby Yah that thou wilt not deal falsely," which means to cheat, swindle Abimelech, "with me, nor my son, nor my son's son, but according to the kindness that I have done unto thee, thou shalt do unto me and to the land wherein thou hast sojourned." So Abimelech made Abraham to swear an oath. He didn't make him. He he desired him to. A promise that Abraham would not deal falsely with him nor his descendants up to his grandson. And that was binding. Once Abraham swore that oath, that was binding on him all the way to Abimelech's grandson, through the generation of his grandson. Again, to swear 7650 to seven oneself to be complete. So that oath would be completed up and all the way through Abimelech's grandson. Again, I get a reminder, an oath is to swear to a person, place, or thing. So when one swears, he enters into an oath. An oath is to swear, and swearing is an oath. Okay, verse 24, and Abraham said, I will swear, I agree to do this. All right, I'll agree to it, I'll agree to your terms. And Abraham was an honorable man, so he had no problem doing it. And Abraham reproved Abimelech because of the well of water which Abimelech's servants had violently taken away. So now we're getting the story here of what's going on. There was a whole situation in the verses before where there was a well of water, seven wells of water, as some people will attest to, because of the name. We'll look at that in a minute here. And there was a big argument that ensued between Abimelech trying to think they're his, and then Abraham knowing that they're his, that he dug them. But Abimelech's servants were trying to take them away, trying to say that they were their master Abimelech's. And Abraham reproved Abimelech because of the well of water which Abimelech's servants had violently taken away. And Abimelech said, I wot not who hath done this thing, neither did thou tell me, neither yet heard I of it, but today. So he's saying that, hey, I just found out about this. I don't know which servants did this. I don't know who the culprits are. I don't know, but I just found out, right? I just found out. But that's why Abimelech said, man, hey, I know your Elohim's with you. I can see it and definitely see the fruit in your life. And, you know, hey, I can understand who's got the upper hand here, right? So just swear to me that you're not going to cheat me or deal falsely with me or up to the third generation of my descendants. So this is what Abraham did to prove the promise of his oath. And Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and both of them made a covenant. An oath is a sworn affirmation to be true and faithful to one's promises. A covenant is a solemn promise between two parties. That's the biggest difference. Again, an oath is a sworn affirmation to be true and faithful to one's promise. So if you promise to do something, you swear the oath, you're going to carry, and then the covenant is the solemn promise between the two parties that you're going to support the covenant by the means of the oath that you promised to perform, that you swore. Okay, the covenant, the agreement that the well belonged to Abraham, and the oath was that both parties would promise to uphold the covenant agreement. Remember, there was a squabble with some saying that these were Abimelech's wells, and then everybody knowing they were Abraham's, so they both promised that, hey, we're going to uphold this covenant, Abraham swore this oath that, and these are going to stay in my house, okay? And Abraham set seven ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what mean these seven ewe lambs which thou hast set by themselves? And he said, so Abraham's about ready to explain what these seven, remember, he'd already given him sheep and oxen, but he took these seven separate, and this was to seal the deal. Remember, this all goes back into the definition. When you swear something, it means to seven yourself, to seven oneself. So Abraham and his swearing attested to his swearing by presenting Abimelech with these seven ewe lambs, these seven female lambs. And Abimelech's going like, well, why did you do that? Because you just gave me some sheep and oxen. I thought that was a sealing of the covenant. And Abraham's going farther saying, no. He's using that particular number seven to show this deal is sealed, right? Again, Abimelech says, what mean these seven female lambs which thou hast set by themselves? And he said, these seven ewe lambs which thou take out of my hand, that they may be a witness unto me that I have digged this well. So there's no question after that, right? Wherefore he called the place Beersheba, because there they swear both of them. So they both swear to an oath, a promise, that these wells are going to remain in Abraham's hand forever, how many generations. And also Abraham swore that he wouldn't deal falsely with Abimelech, at least up to his grandson. This is the key, as it was here that both parties promised, bound in an oath of promise, to uphold their covenant agreement with the seven lambs, proving that the deal was sealed and done. All right, the word Beersheba, the reason they call it Beersheba, I'm going to give you both the Strong's and both the Brown Driver Briggs definition. It's the Hebrew 884. Hebrew 884. From the Strong's, it means the well of oath. Again, Sheba being the root word for oath. So now we can see how that Hebrew definition actually was placed here in the name. We can see the root of Sheba here. Okay, again, the Strong's means the well of oath. And then in Brown Driver Briggs, it means the well of the sevenfold oath, meaning the seven ewe lambs, the seven females that were given to as part of the covenant, as the promise of the oath that sealed the deal. Oh, geez, I hope I'm making sense. I really do. I know it's a lot. I know it's a lot of going back and forth, but I'm trying to show you how in our culture, in the ancient Israelite culture, how seven, the number seven, was so tied into oaths and swearing of oaths. I wish they had more accounts of it so you could illustrate that, because when you see somebody and you read the account that somebody's going to swear an oath, they don't ever says anything about them having repeated seven times, but the reason they probably don't hear that written in the book, you don't see that written, excuse me, in the book, is because it was part of our culture already. There was no point for them to have to put that in the text anywhere, because they already knew in the culture that that's how you performed your oath, that's how you swore them, is that you may have spoken seven times. There might have been seven witnesses there. Again, seven being the number of completion. So once it's sworn, and whatever the context of seven is that you're working with, shows that the deal is sealed, right? And it's your bond. That's the witness against you that you will keep your sworn oath, your sworn promise. All right, thank you all for the feedback. Appreciate it. All right, Genesis, yeah, verse 32. Thus they made a covenant in Beersheba, then Abimelech, or they made a covenant at the well of sevenfold oath, or the well of oath. Then Abimelech rose up and Pichol, the chief captain of the host, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. Again, they made a covenant agreement based on a two-party consent and upon Abraham's oath of promise that he would allow Abimelech's family line up until his grandson to be lived peaceable with Abraham and never be concerned about being cheated, and that Abimelech entered into an oath of promise that he would abide by the conditions of the terms of the contract, meaning keep your damn hands off these wells because they belong to us. All right, Genesis 29, verses 16 through, looks like 28. The reason I included this story, because there's some very significant things here that are happening, and they involve the number seven. And again, seven goes back to the root word for swear. I mean, you just can't get away from it, right? Even though it's not mentioned here, you won't see the word swear in this account. You can see the implications by the promises that Jacob made, even though it's not written. So it definitely is, you know, in here, indirectly in this account, without being directly written. So let's go through this. Okay, starting verse 16, and Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Everybody knows the story, right? Leah was tender-eyed, but Rachel was beautiful and well-favored. And Jacob loved Rachel. Now, Jacob's about ready to make a declaration. He's about ready to make a pledge. And I believe that he made an oath. And I'll show you why. And he said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. Again, I said earlier that, again, Yah said that you need to swear by his name. Well, you have to understand, this was before the law became formally written down. And when Yah put it down there, then it was after that time, because where there is no law, there's no transgression of the law, okay? But, again, the men here, these men were so honorable, so respectful, that when they said something, when they entered into a sworn oath, they were going to perform it. So we have Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, the younger daughter. Again, the word seven is from the Hebrew 7651, Sheba, which comes from the root word 7650, Shabbat, which means to complete, to seven oneself, that is to swear. So when Jacob said he will serve 7 years, he sevened himself, and that was his sworn oath. That was his sworn promise, and that's how he sealed the deal. This is how the word seven works into swearing of oaths. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. Again, Jacob and Laban, Laban entered into a covenant agreement based on the promise from Jacob that he would become a servant to Laban for 7 years. He could have used any other figure, but he said seven because he knew the significance of that number. And Laban's promise that once the 7 years was complete, that Rachel, Laban's daughter, would become the wife of Jacob. The promise to serve the 7 years was the oath before Laban that Jacob was serious about having Rachel for his wife. And after the completion of the 7 years, remember, an oath has a completion. The promised completion is whatever you terms you set up immediately, whatever you swear to, was fulfilled, and Jacob demanded of Laban Rachel, his daughter. So they both made a promise, they both had an agreement, and they entered into a covenant, a pledge that you do this and I'll do this. If you, so that you understand how that works, how they go hand in hand. Verse 20, and Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had for her. And Jacob said unto Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled. You better believe he was counting them down, boy. He was, I don't know if he had a, he was marking them out with an X on the tree or whatever, but he was counting them down, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. And Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah his daughter and brought her to him, and he went in unto her. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpah, his maid, for a handmaid. And it came to pass in the morning that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Did I not serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore hast thou beguiled me? And Jacob's pissed because he entered into an oath. And he declared it by the 7 years. And now, and Laban agreed to it and his promise that he would allow it to give Rachel after the 7 years, and now it's looking like that Laban broke his oath. And this is serious business. Serious business. He broke the oath and the covenant pledge. And so Jacob's pissed, right? He's like, what in the hell? And Laban said, I'll tell you in a minute. And Laban said, it must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. And he says, fulfill her week. And we will give thee this also. Remember, week, the word week, goes back to the Hebrew 7651, which goes back to the Hebrew word 7650 is the root. Very interesting. Seven oneself. And we will give thee this also. So fulfill her week. And we will give these also, meaning his younger daughter, for the service with Rachel, the service with also sure me yet 7 other years. So he's going to bind him by a promise again for another 7 years after that. It's interesting to note that the fulfillment of the week appears it was more so for the woman than the man, and that it was over the course of the week that the fulfillment was complete, as if the covenant of the marriage is officially recognized and sealed after the time of 7 days. That would seal the covenant, wouldn't it? The promise was to the wife and her role, the husband and his role, and they were together, they feasted for 7 days. You can find this in Judges 14:17, even though it's not officially here. Laban said that this is a custom of our country, but he said fulfill her week. He could, why not fulfill her 3 days? Why not fulfill her 2 weeks, you know? But he used, again, the term of 7 days or 1 week. And though we have no real identifiers of what fulfilling a week consisted of, we do have the account in Judges 14:17 that the week was a week of feasting and celebration of marriage. So again, this was another way, I believe, in, even though it's not here, this is definitely, what in the world are they watching out there? Oh, sorry, one of the children out there watching a damn cat or something. I don't know what it is. Anyway, sorry about the distraction. Security camera. So we have a, without exactly saying it, we can see that there is definitely some type of covenant fulfillment here of the 7 day period of when somebody first gets married. I mean, it's a binding on the covenant. Now I know that we don't feast for 7 days, but we have testimony that that's what they did. They went for a week. You know, we don't do that no more as a custom, as a people. I don't know if it's perfectly lawful. I would believe so. And of course, when you look into prophecy, if as Pastor has said so many times, his belief is that during the 7 days of tabernacles is when, you know, the wedding feast is. And that would also be a declaration of sealing it, of the covenant for the 7 days of the feast. Anyway, verse 28. And Jacob did so and fulfilled their week, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, to wife also. Okay, Laban, upon reading of his dealings with Jacob, he showed himself to be a swindler and deceptive, seemingly always looking for others to use those around him. Technically, though, after looking at the story and seeing this, technically, this is how sneaky Laban was. Man, this was a businessman. He was a swindler. I mean, that's my own estimation of him, and I'll show you why. Technically, Laban did not break his treaty covenant agreement with Jacob in regards to Rachel, which was supposed to be his wife after 7 years, and upheld his promise to give Rachel for a wife to Jacob, but used the principles of subterfuge to gain another 7 years of service from Jacob, right? He did give her. After the week, he gave her. Okay, so it was 7 years and 1 week. He still got her. But then he also went in there and said, I'll tell you what, though, just to make this part of it again, because technically I couldn't give it to you as a first wife because the older one's supposed to. So you see the crap this guy pulled, right? He knew what he was doing the whole time, but he also knew that he technically didn't break his promise because Jacob did get Rachel. But then he got talked into serving another 7 years because he hadn't served for the younger daughter. He just served for the older one. See how tricky this guy was? Anyway, I hope that makes sense. All right, Genesis chapter 9, verses 8. Genesis 9, 8 through 17. Another interesting correlation of 7. Okay, the story of Noah after the flood. And Yah spake unto Noah and to his sons with him, saying, And behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your seed after. So Yah is saying that I'm going to make a pledge myself personally with you, Noah, your sons, and then all the generations that come after. They're going to be, this is my declared promise, right? Basically my oath that I'm making with you, and this is the term of it. But the end of it is this covenant for all the generations after you. And with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl of the cattle and every beast of the earth with you, from all that go out of the ark to every beast of the field. Again, this is a promise. And I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all, this is the covenant, this is the promise that he made. And I submit to you that this was actually an oath that Yah was making to Abraham, or to Noah. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of the flood, neither shall any more be a flood to destroy the earth. And Yah is going to show this oath of promise, this covenant agreement, using a 7, as we're going to see. The promise from Yahweh is that all the flesh would not ever be cut off again by a flood, or that the whole earth would never experience a worldwide flooding again. This promise was confirmed in a covenant pledge from Yahweh alone. Unlike many covenants which are entered into by multiple parties, this covenant was only the promise of Yahweh. The covenant was sealed in the promise, the oath of Yahweh, if you will, and we'll see the confirmation, the completion of this promise by the sign Yahweh established going forward. So this was a promise to Noah, but Yah declared it by himself. He didn't need Noah's agreement with it because it was his pledge and his oath of testimony to Noah, and that, and by default, Noah and his generations after them, which is us, were brought into this covenant, into this promise. And Yah said, "This is the token of the covenant, or the pledge, which I make between you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set a bow in the cloud, and it shall be a token of the covenant between me and the earth." Now, incidentally, there are seven colors in a rainbow. Isn't that interesting? The seven colors represent the fulfillment of the covenant, the promise of the oath, which Yahweh made to never destroy earth again by the flood of waters. The order of the rainbow spectrum, if anybody wants to know, I got it written here in my notes, is red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. Them are the seven colors. So we have the ceiling by the seven colors that are in the bowl. It's just not the bowl, but it was comprised. It could have been four colors. It could have been ten. You know, whatever the case might have been. But again, it specifically has the number seven, which goes back to swear. Verse 14, "And it shall come to pass when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant," and we will too, "which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall no more become a flood to destroy all the earth. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between Yah and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. And Yah said unto Noah, this is the token of the covenant, the sign which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth." Okay, there were three different accounts of how seven and swearing of oaths work together with each other by promises. How the promises and the sealing, I sincerely believe that seven represents the a seal, if you will, a binding of the contract. All right, Deuteronomy chapter 31, Deuteronomy 31, 1 through 7, Deuteronomy 31, 1 through 7. And we're gonna just read here about the longevity of how Yah handled his promises and how he never went back on them. Verse 1, "And Moshe went and spake these words unto all Israel, and he said unto them, I am 120 years old this day, I can no more go out and come in. Also Yahweh has said unto me, thou shalt not go over this Jordan, this river Jordan." So you got Moses, he really can't get around too well anymore. You know, he's getting near the end of his life anyway. And besides that, Yah already said that I'm not going over anyway. So, you know, I got two things working against me from being able to actually go into the promised land. "And Yahweh Elohim, he will go over before thee, and he will destroy these nations from before thee." Why is he going to do this? Because he made a promise. He had Israel enter into a covenant. He swore an oath, and he's going to complete this oath. "And thou shalt possess them, and Joshua, he shall go over before thee, as Yahweh has said. And Yahweh shall do unto them as he did to Sihon and to Og, king of the Amorites, and unto the land of them whom he destroyed. And Yahweh shall give them up before your face, that he may do unto them according to all the commandments which I have commanded you. Be strong and of good courage, fear not, nor be afraid of them, for Yahweh the Elohim, he it is that does go with thee, he will not fail thee nor forsake thee." And verse 7, "And Moses called unto Joshua and said unto him in the sight of all Israel, be strong, be of good courage, for thou must go with this people unto the land which Yahweh had sworn unto their fathers to give them, and thou shalt cause them to enter in." And this is interesting too, but depending on how one recalls the history of the time of children in Israel in bitter bondage under the hand of the Egyptians, it is possible that there were seven generations. This is possible. It is possible that there were actually seven generations of which the promise of the land of Canaan had gone through before Israel received the land under the guidance of Joshua. For many claim that there are seven generations from the time Yahweh had given Abraham the sworn oath for the promised land until Moses led the Exodus out of Egypt after wandering 40 years plus in the wilderness, made it to the banks of the Jordan River and the land of the promise waiting on the other side. So there, it appears that there actually was seven generations from the time Abraham got that and by the time they actually went over the Jordan. So again, so that would be a sealing of the covenant promise, the oath that Yah swore to Abraham in the very beginning. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying it's very interesting. We start looking, again, how the number seven, completion, enters into a lot of these accounts. All right, Nehemiah chapter 13, verses 23 through 25. And we're just going to go through some stories here, or some accounts of the record in our books that show where it was so vital to our people, to Israel, to understand. They knew the importance of swearing, and they always instituted when they actually needed men's integrity to stand, because men understood how serious it was to break these things. I mean, it was a fear, right? I mean, we read back in, I believe, Deuteronomy that to fear Yahweh and to swear by His name. Well, the two go hand in hand. You should be fearing Yahweh when you enter an oath, and you should be fearing that you never break it, because when you do, there's going to be sin there. There's going to be a transgression directly against the Most High. In those days, again, Nehemiah chapter 13, 23 through 25. In those days also I saw Yehudim that had merry wives of Ashdod and Ammon and Moab, and their children spake in the half the speech of Ashdod and could not speak in the Yehudim's language, but according to the language of each people. So, of course, we've got a real mess here. All these mixing in of Israel. And I contended with them and cursed them and smote certain of them, talking about certain of these Yehudim that had actually brought this in to be amongst the people, were guilty of this when they knew that this was against Torah. And plucked off their hair, man, this, I'm telling you, Nehemiah went in on them, boy. I'm telling you, he smote them, man. He physically, he was so angry, he physically let these men have it for doing this, for actually allowing this to happen, for actually disregarding Yah's laws, statutes, and commandments, right? And plucked off their hair. And I guarantee Yah did not charge Nehemiah for his passion, put it that way, even though it had a lot of physicality to it. He didn't charge him for it. And smote certain of them and plucked off their hair and made them, he forced them, he made them swear by Elohim. Now we're seeing in his name, saying, you shall not give your daughters unto their sons, nor take their daughters unto your sons or for yourselves. It is very clear to see the passion for Yah's ways and the vehemence against his Israelite brethren that Nehemiah was displaying. In order to best put a stop to Israel taking heathen wives, Nehemiah made them to swear an oath by the name of Yahweh to stop this transgression, thereby putting all that swore under a curse, if they went back on their oath and in sin and falling under Yah's anger. 2 Chronicles 6:22-23. If a man sin against his neighbor, and an oath be laid upon him to make him swear, and the oath come before thine altar in this house. Okay, what this is saying is that if a man trespasses against his brother or sister to his sister, whatever the case is, then the one in the suspected sin, if they refute that they have done wrong against their brother or sister, and to prove this, if they say, no, that's not us, if they are mandated, then they are then mandated to swear an oath in the name of Yahweh that they are not at fault or guilty of sin and proclaim the innocence. That a brother or sister will testify before Yah and in the presence of men that they are free from the charge of sin levied against them, and to do this they shall swear by an oath and proclaim all their innocence. But, okay, let's look at the but. Then hear thou from heaven, so they've done this, they said, okay, I'll tell you what, we ain't got nothing to hide, we'll say, hey, I'm going to, because that's what the law is telling you. I'm going to enter into this. I'm going to swear this oath that I'm not at fault here. I'm not the guilty party in this altercation. And this stuff had some real bearing, some serious bearing, that they actually implicate this stuff. They mandate this, the swearing of oaths. Then hear thou from heaven, and do and judge thy servants by requiting the wicked, by recompensing his way upon his own head. And by here comes the curse for the one that's lying. And by justifying the righteous, by giving him according to his righteousness. Now who sits in heaven judging the hearts of men? Well, that's simple. So it will be Yahweh who will show who is truly the liar and who is the one justified in righteousness. And again, you know, my thought here, this is, you know, just sickened, but, you know, perhaps we need to reinstitute this manner of living in Israel. Doing so might cause us to move more carefully and with mindfulness of how we deal with our brothers and sisters. And if we have, because it's lawful. I mean, it's definitely lawful. And there's an altercation, and both people are holding the ground, but you know somebody's lying. I'll tell you what, all right? Swear to an oath that you're not lying. I guarantee it'd make the guilty party cough it up right away, because if they understand how serious it is, you're actually coming directly against the Most High in His name. You're actually defiling His name, profaning, as we read earlier. And Yah's not going to be well with that at all. As I actually said, remember earlier when we were reading the account that he actually gets angry. But could you imagine where people would be? They'd be shaking in their boots. They'd probably piss their pants if we actually put this back into play again. And again, it's lawful. I mean, if Yahweh swore because he could swear by no greater, then we definitely know that it's absolutely acceptable, right? 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 41. 1 Kings 2, 41 through 44. Just going over a few accounts here. We're getting there. And it was told Solomon that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and was come again. In context of the whole story, when David left Jerusalem, when Absalom was coming with the armies, if you remember the account that there was a Yehudim there named Shimei, who started throwing dust in the air and at David and basically cursing David the king, right? And then David said, man, and then Joab was going to go slay him, but David said, no, just leave him be, right? Who knows? He may be speaking out of the oracles of Yah. We don't know, but just leave him be for right now, okay? So we have Shimei again here dealing with Solomon. And it was told Solomon that Shimei had gone to Jerusalem to Gath and was come again. And the king sent and called for Shimei and said unto him, did I not make thee to swear by Yahweh? And protested unto thee. I mean, I was like, I hope you understand this, really. I'm giving, this is my promise, right? If you do this, this is my promise, right? But if you don't, this is what's going to happen. Trying to get him to remember, trying to remind him of the agreement, the covenant agreement that they made. Did I not make thee swear by Yahweh and protest unto thee, saying, know for certain, on the day that thou goest out and walkest abroad any whither, that thou shalt surely die, and thou saidest to me, the word that I heard is good. So he entered into the oath and sworn that Shimei I already acknowledged, right? Solomon's reminding him, and he said, yeah, that was a good word, that's right. But you have to understand that Shimei, the promise was, and because Solomon, you know, there was people telling him to go ahead and kill this man, but Solomon he actually showed some mercy and said, okay, as long as you stay here in Jerusalem, you're fine, right? And you swore by the Most High, by His name, that you would never leave Jerusalem. So now you're in transgression. And then the payment for that, because you broke the covenant agreement with me, is that you're surely going to die. And he said to me, well, he couldn't disagree with it. The word you said is good. It's right. It's correct. That's what I did say. Why then hast thou not kept the oath of Yahweh and commandment that I have charged thee with? The king said moreover to Shimei, thou knowest all the wickedness which is in thy heart is privy to, that thou didst to my David, my father. Now he's going to remind him of all the crap he got and all the reason that he should have been dead way back then, right? Therefore, Yahweh shall return thy wickedness upon thine own hand, because he broke his sworn oath, and Yah is going to return this right back on his head now. And so we all know that Solomon had Shimei put to death, had him run through, again, because he broke his word, he broke his promise. That's how serious the oath was. They weren't going to say, oh, well, you know, we understand that, hey, you know, you have business out there. We understand if you just want to, venture out of, you know, Jerusalem for a few days or whatever. Hey, it's okay. No, man, it was all about, a man's promise and his sworn oath to do is that which he said he would do. And this man here clearly broke it, and it cost him with his life. Numbers 30, 1 through 3. I'm not going to go through the whole thing again. I covered in vows and pertaining to specifically vows in Numbers 30. But we got to hit a little bit about the oaths in Numbers 30. Numbers 30, 1 through 3. And Moshe spake unto the heads of the tribes concerning the children of Israel, saying, this is the thing which Yahweh hath commanded. This is coming right from the Most High, from the throne room. If a man vow unto Yahweh, or, the big or, in addition to, swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. If a woman also vow unto Yahweh, and or bind herself by a bond, being in her father's house in her youth. Remember, in part one we covered vows, that in verse 3, as a woman was typically covered under the authority of her father or husband, that there were further instructions given by Yahweh through Moses to deal with these situations. But a woman not under any authority, whereas the man in verse 2. And that any vow or swearing of an oath to bind herself with a bond, she must fulfill or be guilty of sin. And so what I'm saying, it goes both ways, right? This falls on men as well as women. But again, here it is. Numbers 30, if you swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do all according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. All right, Numbers chapter 5, verses 20 and 21. We're getting there. Numbers 5, 20 and 21. Like I said, man, when I started doing this, there's just so much. In the volume when it's talking about swearing and promises and swearing oaths, and I could have used a whole bunch of other stuff in there. I could have used Numbers 5, the whole thing, because that has to do about an oath of cursing if, you know, the woman was found lying and her thigh swelled and rotted and all kinds of stuff. But to keep it, as short as I could, I had to keep, cut it off somewhere. But anyway, Numbers 5, verses 20 and 21. Numbers 5, verses 20 and 21. This is, you have to go back and read the whole story in context, but here we're introducing in here that they're being directed at the woman from the priest. But if thou hast gone aside to another instead of thy husband, and if thou be defiled, and some man have lain with thee beside thine husband, then the priest shall charge the woman with an oath of cursing. And the priest shall say unto the woman, Yahweh make thee a curse and an oath among thy people, when Yahweh does make thy thigh to rot and thy belly to swell. In this instance, the woman was demanded to make an oath of her innocence or guilt, and she entered into a curse sworn by her own mouth, meaning she entered the curse that if she was proven that she lied, or she did commit adultery, or sure of her infidelity, and then you would see the manifestation of that fact that she lied, and she would be have that curse actually rest upon her the rest of her days. And again, I'll just say this again, we don't find anywhere where they're talking about swearing an oath or an oath of cursing or whatever the case is, you don't see anybody repeating it seven times. I mean, it's not written about, and the possibility is because it didn't need to be, because it was just generally known in the culture back then, right? And it was just part of Israel as a people. There might have been seven witnesses here. Again, it all comes back down to seven, but that again is the ceiling of whatever the oath is. That's my opinion, but I believe it to be pretty valid. Hebrews chapter 6, verses 13 through 18. Hebrews chapter 6, 13 through 18. For when Yah made promise to Abraham, way back in the beginning, because he could swear by no greater, because there's nobody greater than Yah, he sware by himself. Again, see, Yah swore oaths. He made promises. And he held himself, he bound himself by his oath. He bound himself by the oath that he swore, saying, surely blessing, I will bless thee, and multiplying, I will multiply thee. And so after he had patiently endured, he obtained the promise. Talking about Abraham. For men verily swear by the greater, and an oath of confirmation is to the end of all strife, meaning men also by the greater, which is Yahweh, and there is nothing to swear by, and there's none greater than Yahweh. And an oath of confirmation, what that does is ends the possibility for debate and discussion as to the meaning and intent. A confirmation that the thing sworn of Yahweh will be without doubt and performed and carried out to his fullest intent. That's what it means by an oath of confirmation to the end of strife. There can't be any strife because of the surety of the oath when you swear in Yah's name. It's either you're going to hold your promise and not be found a liar, but there's no debate after that, after you entered into it. That is the oath of confirmation, swearing in Yah's name. Wherein Yah, willing more abundantly to show unto the heirs of the promise the immutability, help me Jesus, of his counsel, confirmed it by an oath. More than just saying, you know, hey, this is what I'm going to do. You know, I'm just, because he could have just done that, right? He's Yahweh the Elohim. His word is his bond, right? But showing, even in a greater aspect, that he meant business, he confirmed it by an oath. And doing this, absolutely, I mean, should have removed completely, forever, any doubts, hesitation at all, because he made it in the form of an oath. He made it, he himself promised that this thing was going to take place, and it did. And so there should be no doubt, there should be no debate about it, no strife. It is a confirmation. Verse 18, that by two immutable things in which it is impossible for Yah to lie, we might have strong consolation, who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us. And the two immutable things were that he would bless Abraham's seed and multiply it by first his word and then promising and a sworn oath to complete it, leaving absolutely no doubt that what was promised would come to fruition. He couldn't do it. It's impossible for him to lie. Isaiah chapter 45, verses 22 and 23. We are getting there to the end. All right, it says, look unto me, and ye be saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am Yahweh the Elohim, and there is none else. I have sworn by myself, the word has gone out of my mouth in righteousness. That's because I'm pure, because my word is holy, because I'm honorable, because I'm Yahweh the Elohim. There's none greater. The word has gone out of my mouth and automatically. When he swears something, Yah something, you know it's coming out right. You know it's just. And shall not return, that unto me every knee shall bow and every tongue shall swear. Wow, Yah actually said this. And he said that every knee shall bow and every tongue shall swear. They will bind themselves to this oath whether they like it or not, because Yahweh declared it. That Yahweh, he is king of all and the creator of all, the ruler of all. Okay, the following verses I'm about to discuss have come up in many debates and beliefs about the abolition of swearing oaths, but that is simply not true and not the case, as careful reading of the context and content will reveal what was really happening and being said. We're talking about the account in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Okay. Specifically this one in Matthew. I think it's only found in Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew. Okay, Matthew chapter 5, verse 33 through 37. Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 through 37. And I could have used some of the other accounts written in Matthew, but I think this is enough to be sufficient. Again, you have heard that it hath been said of them in old time. Of course, this is Yahshua speaking to the people. Thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shall perform unto Yahweh thy oaths, the master thy oaths. The word forswear is to mean not swear falsely. Thou shalt not swear falsely when thou dost swear, but thou shalt perform to Yahweh thine oaths, and that is true. But I say unto you, swear not at all. Well, all of a sudden, Yahshua looks like he's going to change the Torah. He's going to change and remove this part of the law. But he said he didn't come to way to do with the law or the prophet. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is Yah's throne. Okay, Jesus is about to correct a huge deception being propagated by the religious authority of that day and making it clear what is not acceptable and not of Yahweh, of swearing oaths with baseless foundations. So he says, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is Yah's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shall thou swear by the head, because thou cannot make one hair white or black. These are all useless vows. They have no merit, they have no substance, they have no foundations. Because you remember that Yah already commanded in the Torah, the only thing you can swear by as an Israelite is by his name. So we got the scribes and Pharisees saying, well, it's okay to swear by heaven. And okay, let me read this. Swear by one's own merit and trustworthiness, as when a man talking about swearing by your own head. Because you can't make one hair white or black. You're not the creator. You don't have that authority, that you're not Elohim. As when a man promised to do that or this based on who he is and his standing among men, right? Because you think you're a great man, people just ought to believe you. You could be a man that breaks promises all the time, but if you swear an oath in the name of Yahweh, you're bound to that. Yahshua said no to this. We are not Yahweh. We have no power of creation, the creating of mankind, or anything else for that matter. The only thing that carries merit, an unwavering basis to swear oaths and make promises, comes in the name of Yahweh. Can you imagine what Israel would become? How they would walk more carefully and soberly if a promise was committed in the form of sworn oaths in the name of Yahweh? That's a question to ask for the listening audience. For example, when you are asked to swear in a court of law that you're testing, what in the world they got that in there? Gosh, this shouldn't be in there, so just disregard that. That was for something else. But verse 7, okay, but let your communication be yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these come of evil. Jesus is trying to preserve these people out of this made-up fabrication of what these religious leaders were trying to do. And I'm going to tell you why they did this, right? The reason they did this, they didn't invoke Yah's name anywhere, is clear, because not doing it, they thought that they could get away with breaking their promises and not be held accountable, because they knew under Yah, by swearing his name. Now, they picked all this kind of stuff that was directly related to the Most High, right? In some way, shape, or form. But all this stuff didn't carry the sealing, or the covenant, or the promise. The sure promise is when things are sworn in the name of Yahweh. All right, for whatsoever is more than these cometh evil. Come evil because the soundness of the things being sworn on leave room for failure, lack of honor and integrity, broken promises, etc. As swearing by these things led to the liars approving these methods to believe that since they were not invoking the name of Yahweh and just things to do with him, that there would be no consequences backing out, which he is simply not going to be the case. Let all men be liars, let Yahweh be true, who he is and what he is and his word. So that was the reason for that, because you're reading some Christian publications, some articles and some other things that I've seen online, is that they say that swearing of vows is no longer because Jesus abolished it, right? No, he didn't. He just called the liars out for who they were, these cowards that didn't want to end. They were looking like they were holy before the people and making them do the same thing, thinking that you're okay in doing this, but the fact of the matter is they were breaking Torah anyway. Okay, James chapter 5, verse 12. But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by earth, neither by any oath, but let your yea be yea and your nay be nay, lest ye fall into condemnation. Again, do you see anything by swearing in Yah's name here, mentioned here at all? No, the same things that James is mentioning here, the same thing Yahshua said in chapter 5 that we just read. And again, the word condemnation, lest you fall in, it means hypocrisy. You'll be labeled a hypocrite. Just about there. All right, Sirach. We're going to go to the Apocrypha, Ecclesiasticus, Sirach 23:7. 7 through 15, and that'll wrap it up. Sirach 23:7-15. Man, thank you all for your patience. Hallelujah. All right, Sirach 23, starting verse 7. Oh, hear, O ye children, the discipline of the mouth. He that keepeth it shall never be taken his lips. So it starts out right away giving you an admonition and a warning. It's something called the discipline of your mouth. Being able to rein it in, being able to control it. The sinner shall be left in his foolishness. Both the evil speaker and the proud shall fall thereby. Meaning that discipline of one's mouth to stop men from swearing oaths and foolishness, rashness because of evil thought, intents of heart, these all shall fall. And I've already included the word swearing oaths, but we can find out later. But as we read on, that this is what this is all about. The discipline of mouth has to do directly with swearing of oaths. Verse 29. Accustom not thy mouth to swearing. Well, you know, why? Okay, so there's the admonition here. If you're a fool, don't accustom not thy mouth to swearing. Neither use thyself in the naming of the Holy One. Again, don't forget the context is speaking of those who have undisciplined mouths, who speak foolishly and proudly and don't have the constraint to guard against just speaking when they feel they can just want to speak. Those who speak in vanity and emptiness. That's who this is being directed are for these foolish men that just utter it, you know, not even thinking. They're still invoking Yah's name. Now they got to pay the consequence for them and also bring the curse upon themselves. And that probably was to make men look like that you were really a person of honor and integrity. And the whole time you're nothing but a fool. Verse 10, for as a servant that is continually beaten shall not be without a blue mark, so is he that sweareth the name of the Yah continually shall not be faultless. Now again, we can better see who are those who with the undisciplined mouths, those who without constraint invoke the name of Yahweh into all their false oaths and false promises, and continually use this fashion and habit to falsely mislead others into believing these men are men of characters, meaning themselves, and those to be trusted because they use the name of Yahweh to swear and promise by. These are just flat-out jackals, right, and deceivers. But what they're so careless, so foolish in their own mind, in the undisciplined words that they're speaking, just throwing it out there casually, that every time they do this and they break that vow that they said they would perform, they're going to get charged with sin and they're going to get the reward for it. Verse 11, a man that uses much swearing shall be filled with iniquity, and the plague shall never depart from his house. Now here we can see part of what the curses are. And he shall offend, his sin shall be upon him. And if he acknowledge not his sin, excuse me, he maketh a double offense. And if he swear in vain, he shall not be innocent, but his house shall be full of calamities. The Torah never truly gives us a good rundown on what the curses would be to those who break sworn oaths. But this list in verse 11, other than whatever they swear is going to come back on their head. But this list in verse 11 certainly is an eye-opener. Is it possible that some of us are listening tonight have a history of plagues, meaning sicknesses and diseases, a lot of ailments going all the time, seemingly always in our home and in our lives, as if one thing upon another, or those who seemingly are beset with a steady stream of calamities? It could very well be that someone in your generational line swore false oaths, and you are the recipient of the curses for doing so. Or it could be that you are the culprit and the one in transgression for having sworn false oaths and broken promises. I don't care what kind of state you were in or what degree your mindset was in. If you invoke the name of Yahweh, you still got to deal with his anger and his retribution if you break your oath. These things will befall those who discipline not their mouths, who are not careful when they enter into a sworn oath, who enter into many false promises in the name of Yahweh. These will suffer badly the consequences of their own broken promises and failed covenants, as breaking oath sworn in the name of Yahweh is sin before the Most High, and there is always payment for sin. All right, moving on to verse 12. There is a word that clothed about with death. God granted it be not found, Yahweh granted it be not found in the heritage of Jacob. For all such things shall be far from the godly, they shall not wall. So he's saying that these things, don't ever allow this stuff to come into Israel. There might be other people outside the covenant, outside the nation of the people of Israel, that just do it and still use God's name, but don't let it be found in all of Israel. Use not their mouth to intemperate swearing, or swearing that is having, showing complete lack of self-control, for there is the word of sin. Remember thy father and thy mother when thou sittest among great men. Be not forgetful before them, so thou by thy custom become a fool, in which that thou hast not been born and cursed the day of nativity. Again, that's swearing with an undisciplined mouth, with not the intent to actually fulfill the promise that you swore to. Verse 15, the man that is accustomed to abhorrious words, that's words that are reproachful, abusive, contemptuous, dishonorable, ignominious, or something, I don't know, that is accustomed, these kind of words will never be reformed all the days of his life. So we see the admonition, the warning again, that when you do, when people do enter into a vow, to swear a vow, especially as we're commanding Israel, in Yah's name only, that's going to keep us in the fear of the Most High. That those that just go off and just carelessly do it, there's a hell of a payment for it and a curse that they have to live with. Well, saints, this is the end of the study. Thank you for your patience. I want to live an hour and 35 minutes. I truly hope that I was able to convey a little bit greater understanding of oaths and swearing oaths and how that relates directly to the Israelite heritage and us as a people. I truly do, but thank you for tuning in tonight. I pray that you all have a blessed week, that you're encouraged, that you are working out your soul salvation with fear and trembling. And as I always say, and mean sincerely, that please pray for our leaders, especially our shepherd here, the Pastor Dow, and of course Pastor Muir, Pastor Corey, all the leadership, the elders, those that have the rule of authority over you, husband, wives for your husbands. And again, pray for one another that you may be healed and then you be set free of whatever it is that may be binding you. So bless y'all. You have a great week. And I look forward to speaking and coming before you, be it Yah's will, in another 5 weeks. All right. Much shalom.
Look at him looking.